This is Carrie Campakis, and you are listening to the Girl Mom Podcast. This is Carrie Campakis, and you're listening to the Girl Mom Podcast. Today's episode is about finding God in real life struggles. My guest, Cynthia Yanoff, is a wife, mother, podcaster, and new author who is also ridiculously committed to not taking herself too seriously as she lives out her faith. Cynthia hosts the popular Mesmerize podcast and believes that life's biggest gifts often come wrapped in messy packages. Cynthia's debut book, Life is Messy, God is Good, invites us to reframe our perspective on the challenges that we face so we can see God at work and also laugh more along the way. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen and share this episode with friends. Also, I have started a new community on Substack where I'm sharing new articles and content, and I'd be honored to have you join me as a subscriber. Find the link to it and also to Cynthia's newest book in the show notes. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Cynthia, welcome to the Girl Mom Podcast. I am so excited to have the tables turned because the last time we did this, you were interviewing me. So it's so fun to be on this end and to get to talk about your newest book, which is so awesome and just and so timely for the times that we're living in.
Oh, thank you, Carrie. I'm the biggest fan. And yes, I got to interview you. Hopefully we're going to do that again soon. So, but I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to struggle. It's a struggle to not ask you questions because I love everything you do and you're so wise. And I want to be like, okay, just let me ask you questions, Carrie.
Well, I know I feel the same way about you. And I mean, that's the best thing. Somebody once told me that when you meet a fellow writer, it's like going from 0 to 8 on the get to know you scale because you just automatically connect on a deep level. So,
right.
And
absolutely.
I just feel like so many of the topics you're writing about are the same things I'm writing about too. And I just love your perspective and especially the heart and the humor that you bring into it.
Oh, thank you, Carrie. Well, I'm excited to be here.
Well, and so tell us, this is your first book, which is so exciting. So tell us, what gave you the inspiration to write on this one? Because that's a big deal, what you choose to be your debut topic.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I'm not one of those people that like my whole life, I always knew I wanted to write a book. And every English teacher said, you're an amazing writer. You should write a book. Like not one time, Carrie Campakis, did anyone say that. But it was as I was kind of doing ministry and speaking into parenting and marriage and foster care and faith, like it just people kind of along the way be like, have you written a book? Have you written a book? And it really wasn't on my radar. And then as only the Lord can do, he just kind of opened doors. And a friend was like, you should talk to my agent, but he's never taken anybody that I've suggested. I'm like, oh, great. Can hardly wait to get rejected. But he ended up taking me and then we got some offers to write it. And I just kind of knew for me, I really wanted to write something that came from a place of being funny and also spiritual truth. But it seems like so often it gets so serious, especially in the faith area. And I get it. Faith is serious. Like I take it very seriously. A girl who grew up in church and like Jesus is everything to me. But I also really like to laugh. And so I'm like, where is that intersection? Where can we be funny and call out what's hard and messy and gross, yet still laugh about it? And that kind of birthed this book, Life is Messy, God is Good.
Well, and it's so, you're just spot on. And that's one thing when I'm talking to moms and, you know, the more I do work with moms, because I really started off my career working with teenage girls, but now that I'm speaking to moms too, I just realized that women especially are so hard on themselves, especially in parenting. Like even when we know there's no such thing as a perfect mom. And even when you've been parenting for 20 years, I see so many people stay stuck in their mistakes or their failures or, you know, and it's hard even when you're given the messages. I'm like, I don't want anybody to take this message tonight and go home beating themselves up. There's so much grace. You know, we all get it wrong.
Totally.
But humor is such a good way to get over that. Like if we can learn to laugh at ourselves and laugh at life. I mean, sometimes something's happening and I'm like, I feel like I'm watching a TV sitcom. Like I could not write this situation. Like, you just have to laugh about it. And so it's so important to bring that humor, not only just in our situations, but just to help us lighten up as moms.
I agree. And my mom, I think some of the best advice my mom ever gave me, she said, if you're going to laugh about it in a year, when it really it comes to parenting, but when you're going to laugh about it, if you're going to laugh about it in a year, then laugh about it now. And, and I remember thinking like, especially first child, like bless our first children's hearts, right? Like, I mean, I overparented that kid to death.
Yes.
And I remember her saying that. I'm like, well, some of these things aren't funny and these are character issues and they were sometimes, but it was still worthy of a laugh, not in front of her. It was worthy of a laugh later. And I'm like, gosh, I wish I could have really internalized that all those years ago. And I always tell the story of my son. I was teaching a Bible study at the private Christian school where two of my kids have gone. And I got a call right after I taught the mom's Bible study. And they're like, hey, Cynthia, Brett was flipping off the kids in the kindergarten, playroom, whatever. And I was like, wait, what? And she was like, yeah, he's flipping off. And he flipped off the ceiling. And so everybody thought he was flipping off Jesus. And I was like, I mean, you know, Carrie, like you can't be at 5 years old. You don't need to be flipping off anyone, much less at the private school flipping off Jesus. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I mean, I'm losing it. And my mom was like, Cynthia, this will be the stuff that, you know, you write a book on someday. And sure enough, it's in there. And of course, did he get into trouble? And did he know? Yes. Did he know what he was doing? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, like, that's not my identity. I don't have to get caught up in all that. I don't have to make this some huge thing. It's not. He made a mistake. Let's laugh a little bit. And we're all good now. He's in high school now. And as far as I know, Carrie, he's not flipping off people anywhere. So all is well.
All is well. Well, you know, it's a totally different story. But what made me, I thought of this recently because I was sharing the story with somebody. I forget what the context even was, but I will never forget. We'd had this it was my year from hell. The tree had fallen on my house. It was just stressful to begin with. So I was already on edge and I was in my bathroom. We're doing some renovations and my cousin was with me and I get this phone call for Mother's Day out. This was mm-hmm. I don't know, over 10 years ago. And anyway, it was about my 2-year-old at Mother's Day out. And they're like, you know, everything is fine because you knew you get that phone call and you're kind of worried. Yeah. That there's an issue. Everything is fine, but she has head lice. And that is a rock bottom parenting moment when you get a call from Mother's Day out and your 2-year-old has head lice. It'd been going around and I was like doing everything in my power for my kids not to get it. But I just remember wanting to cry because that on top of everything else that I was dealing with, I was already stressed out. And my cousin is sitting there with me. And I mean, I can still remember the look on her face and she is trying so hard not to laugh. And she's like, and she's like, one day this is going to be really funny. And yeah. I'm like, you're right. It's not right now. But even her saying that, just having, you know, somebody to be good natured about it, I was like, she was right. And it is a funny story now, but at the time it was really stressful. But you're right. I mean, we can just stay so stuck in those messy places. And we just have to accept that life is never going to be perfect on the side of heaven. So what can we do and how can we get through it with a good attitude? And like I said, not staying stuck. So you and I went back and forth trying to decide what we think were the top 5 points from this book. We're both busy moms. We know a lot of the listeners are busy moms and we're going to give them the cliff notes of your book. So let's start with the first point that one of the biggest takeaways from your book, which is something I firmly believe in too, is to let God's voice be the loudest voice in your life. So how do you do that? How do you, practically speaking, how do you do that in your parenting?
Yeah, I think that's a big one. And we kind of already alluded to a little bit of it. I mean, I think we've got to stop carrying our reputation on our shoulders and really putting it on the shoulders of our kids. Like everything that goes wrong, every head lice call, I've gotten it too, by the way, every head lice call or flipping off at the cafeteria, all those things like that. We can't be defined. Our reputation, our expectations, all the things can't be the shoulders of our kids. When we put that on the shoulders of our kids, I think that's a hard place to be. And so I think one, I have to tell myself like that, my kids' reactions, their behaviors, that's not the loudest voice in the room. But I also have to be very intentional with the people that are around me. And in different seasons, different people have different motivations and influences in my life. And I think about this as one time I had a good friend, I think when we had babies and she was one of my best friends before we had kids and we hung out like every day. And I figured out, Carrie, like, I don't know, maybe when our kids were 4 or 5, she had 2 docile little girls. I had 1 crazy tomboy little girl and a 2-year-old boy that was insane. And our kids, like it just was 2 different worlds. And I started feeling worse about my parenting every time we were together, because there's maybe a little bit of judgment on her side, but it was just different families and different dynamics. And I realized like that wasn't a friend for that season anymore. It just looked different. We're still good friends. I mean, but in terms of every day we're doing life together, all those things, that was not a healthy place. When I start parenting my children differently because of how someone else thinks of my children, like that was a time when I needed to walk away from that voice in the room. And so I think just being keenly in tune with that and saying like, you know, if anything's leading me to a place of guilt or a place of fear, or it's not truth, like biblical truth, then that can't be the loudest voice in the room. And I just think an awareness of that, you know, deep down, if you're paying attention, you're listening, you know, like that's not a healthy place for me, and being willing to, and being brave enough to walk away from that sometimes. I mean, I think that's key.
Yeah, that's so good. And it might be, you know, I think especially some of the moms, I think behind us, there's a mentality that if that friend is judging me for this, these kids, but everything else in the relationship is good, that I have to cut off that friendship completely. Yeah. But I'm like, that might just be a friendship that you're just not going to hang out together with kids. You right. might, that's a friend that you go to dinner with, or you go have drinks with, or whatever. But, you know, there's a certain context. And in this particular season of parenting, it's not a time where you're going to hang out together.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So I believe that too. And I do think the older our kids get, that, you know, if we do put that weight on them, if we're defining ourselves by the decisions that they're making, mm-hmm. or how they're making us look today, it hurts our relationship. You know, and that's one thing I talk a lot about as I'm helping moms. You know, this is building stronger relationships with your teenagers. Like, that will ruin your relationship with your teenager. And I always know that something's wrong with my heart if my child does make a mistake or there is a messed up. And my first question or my first thought is, what are people going to think of me? You know, what are people going to say? That I know that that's, my heart is not in the right posture. And so it's time for me to find my identity in God, go remember who God says that I am, and you really anchor myself in that truth rather than whatever today's circumstances are.
Yeah. Well, and you have to be careful. You have to be careful allowing yourself to be defined by the success and failures of yourself or your kids. Because if you look at how culture is defining success and failure, like, that's a whole scary conundrum right there. And success, especially for our kids, success is, the world defines success as things that are measurable. How fast can you run around the track? You know, what's your ACT score? If you've sent a kid to college, then you know, like, the college resume thing, it's ridiculous. All the things they expect you to look like to get in, quote unquote, the right college. Now, we all know there's no right college. The right college, if at all, is the college where God wants your child. But we have to be careful. If in a world that's measuring success by the things that are measurable, well, for us, like, the most God-honoring thing our kids can do on any given day is not measurable. And so, you know, like, leaving a text thread that's not kind, or walking away from a group of people that are not doing life right, or whatever the things, not cheating on the test, maybe taking a lower grade because you were having your quiet time, whatever those things are, like, those are not the measurable things, generally speaking, yet they're the most God-honoring. And I would just say, we've got to be very careful when we start looking at what we call a success versus what we call a failure. Define it by what God calls success and failure, not by what the world calls success and failure. And so, yeah, this whole idea of carrying that responsibility and with our kids, I mean, that's just a scary place to be if we're not really lining things up for ourselves and for our kids with God's truth.
Yes. And I'd like to follow that up with this question, because I like to ask this to people, you know, how do you hear God's voice in your life? I think it's kind of neat to me how he speaks to us in different ways, sometimes in ways that'll resonate with us personally, maybe not somebody else. But, you know, typically, how do you know? Because I know some people listening might not really be in that mode of trying to listen for God's voice. And, you know, they might not really understand what we're talking about. So could you give a practical example of maybe a situation you were in and how you knew that the voice telling you what to do, how you knew it was from God?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I think I've struggled with that too. It's just like, am I hearing God's voice? Am I hearing my own voice? Am I hearing the voice of whoever is last spoken into me? And I think, you know, I think for me, there's so many different ways. I'm not one of those girls that's like, every time, you know, I heard that from God, or I saw Jesus on a piece of toast. Like, that's not, you know, I'm not a signs, and I'm not that I don't believe God can do that. It just hasn't been my experience. But when I hear clearly from God, I feel like I hear it through music, obviously through scripture, through people that are close to me that are chasing after God too and praying over me. But what I have found also is, it's repetition is how I know it's from God. Like, I will, like, you know, when our family was called into foster care, and I was like, I remember kind of sensing that through a sermon. And I was like, oh no, surely not. That's for more godly people than us. And then, you know, next thing I know, I'm getting flyers in the mail about foster care. Everything on TV talks foster care. I'm like, what's going on? And then people around me were like, you know, you guys would be so great at foster care. It was so interesting. And I just felt like the Lord was kind of hitting it from all angles. But I guess one thing I'd share is a specific example. There was a time when I, in foster care, we needed the Lord to show up in a situation, or things were going to go south with the little boy that we were fostering. And I just remember going down to this church, our neighborhood, and there's a little creek down there, and just praying. And I was like, Lord, I don't understand. Like, I've known you my whole life. And now when I need you the most, like, I feel like you're ghosting me. Like, I feel like I'm hearing from you. You could fix this in 1 second, yet you're not. I mean, I feel like I'm praying for a noble and right thing that would be of your heart. And I remember I just felt like the Lord was like, go down by the creek. And I was like, well, this is weird, because I'm already crying in the middle of my neighborhood. But I went down by the creek. I felt like I saw all the little pebbles and rocks around the creek. And I felt like the Lord was saying, like, remember the Israelites and remember when they crossed over Kerry, when they crossed over dry land, they got to the other side, they would take rocks out of the riverbed and they would stack rocks. Mm-hmm. And that would be so they would have an altar. So they would never forget what God had done. And I felt like the Lord was saying to me in this moment, like, hey, listen, you need to stack some rocks. And so I started like literally picking up rocks. And I was like, I stacked one for a couple for healthy kids and one for a time when my husband nearly died of meningitis, but he didn't. And another for a job we needed at one point. I was stacking all these rocks. And I remembered in that moment, I felt like the Lord so clearly said to me, like, listen, I'm not a remove the hardship kind of God always. I'm a remember who I am kind of God, because he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And if that's the case, if he's been faithful in the past, he will be faithful again. And that was just one of those moments where I just had to go and get quiet and pour out to God and be like, where are you? This makes no sense. And in that moment, his sensing, that leaning to like, get practical, stack some stones, remember who I am. Like that is an example of just really hearing God. And that doesn't happen when Netflix is going and social media is scrolling and my kids, you know, all the things, right? Like that was a moment of like, go get quiet, ask the hard questions and expect an answer. Wait expectantly.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I'm so glad you used that story, because I use that story in Love Her Well book when I was talking about like helping your child through a disappointment and how, you know, if they don't make cheerleader, or they don't make the basketball team, like to them, it is devastating because that's their first huge disappointment. We can look back on our life and we can see times that God carried us through it, which goes back to the stacking the rocks, which mm-hmm. I love that Bible verse, like look back. But one verse I've always loved that goes with that is from the Boundaries book. And they wrote, hope is rooted in memory. And so when you feel hopeless, like where you were, you're in a dark place, you can't see the path forward and you're questioning God, you know, what we can do is go back to the past. Either you're looking at God's faithfulness in the Bible, you know, just that mm-hmm. truth, that timeless truth, or his faithfulness, like you said, in the past of our lives, which is why it's so important to go back and reflect on those times he carried us through those hard times. Yeah. So that is a great example. I think that's going to help people a lot. And it's funny you said repetition, because I have found that to be true in my life. And especially when there's something big that he's calling you to do, mm-hmm. like foster care. If mm-hmm. God was calling me to do that, I would need a lot of repetition. Like
lots of confirmation.
Yes, I would need like confirmation after confirmation. And I feel like he does that, especially for those big things that we might have. Like you can't ignore these signs. There's just so many different road signs pointing toward the same message.
Yeah. That's yeah. Good. I don't know him to try to hide what he has for us, like the plans he has for mm-hmm. us. Like, I think he's pretty straightforward. I try to like, you know, sweep it under the rug and be like, surely not us, or maybe another season, Lord, or, you know, those things. But I think with the repetition and just getting quiet, I mean, between scripture, all the things we talked about, scripture and the people around you that are chasing after the Lord and people praying for you. I mean, he makes it obvious.
Yes, it's true. And I also think it goes back, you're talking about the company that you choose, which is so important. And you really do need godly people in your life, because, you know, you choose your advice when you choose your advisor, you know? So if you need these friends to help you that have that, that know the Bible and they know God's character and they can help you discern what God is trying to tell you, that plays such a huge role.
Well, and I think about that, like with friendships, I think I get asked that maybe the most from women, really. Yeah. With our kids too. But just having godly friendships around us, how do we do it? And you know, you and I both know that just takes a lot of intentionality, but mm-hmm. I also think just like everything in life, we tend to get so consumed on, quantity over quality. Like, you know, I'm literally one girl, you know, scrolling and one girl's trip that I didn't get invited to away from thinking everybody hates me. And when I have all these dear friends that are so close. And I think we've got to realize like a few really good quality friends that are speaking truth into us. I think of that story of the paralytic in the Bible, and remember his buddies pick him up and carry him to see Jesus because he needs healing and they can't even get in the door. It's so crowded. And so they take him up to the roof and they cut a hole and they lower him, right? And Jesus says something there. He says, I healed you because of the faith of your friends. And I'm just here to say, if Jesus is healing people because of the faith of their friends, then you got to know like your circle matters. You don't need the 25 friends that went to Cabo without you. Like that may not be your people, but you need the three or four like this guy had that are going to see the problem and not give up. They're going to believe in your marriage when your marriage is hard. They're going to pray over your kids when your kids are making stupid decisions. They're going to be the ones that are going to chase after your dreams when you want to give up on it. Like those are the people you need. Surround yourselves with those. Lots of acquaintances, sure. Like, mm-hmm. absolutely. But the people that get to speak into you to be, like we said, the the loudest voice in the room. You've got to be intentional, and you've got to make sure those are the ones that are pointing you to Jesus.
Yes. And that's such a great point about how do you find godly friends? I mean, and it's true. I think as you grow in your faith, you're going to be attracted to that in other people. Mm-hmm. And so I think like one way that if I was just randomly looking for godly people, I mean, an example that would come to mind in my head is just if you're doing a Bible study mm-hmm. and there's 20 people, you know, a lot of times we're just attracted to the person that has the best personality, the most charisma. But if you're really growing in your faith, what you're going to be attracted to is maybe somebody that never speaks, but when they do speak, they say something so wise. Mm-hmm. You're like, wow. And you know, it's truth. You know, it's from God. I mean, and in those moments we can say, hey, I want to get to know her better. She might be 10 years older than me. She might be 10 years younger than me. You know, it might not even be somebody that's in my same stage of life. But I think that's how we find godly people is just as we're experiencing life and we're seeing how other people are doing life and responding to events. We're thinking, ooh, I like that. I like her mindset. Mm-hmm. I like her maturity. I feel like I have a lot to learn from her. To me, those are the kind of people that I'm drawn to. The older I get, and the more I know, I'm like, I just want to be around people who I feel like are ahead of me in their spiritual journey.
Yes.
And inspire me to keep pressing on.
Yeah. That's a good word to listen. And the people, yeah, not the loudest in the room, but maybe the wisest in the room. And we all know that person. I think that's something I needed to hear. It's a good word, Carrie.
That's good. Okay. So the next point we said was one of the highlights from your book is, and we've touched on it, is to choose your most trusted circle wisely, mm-hmm. which I mean, this is what I preach with teenage girls. I'm like, mm-hmm. but especially at our age, I'm like, we don't have a lot of extra time for friendships. You know, I'm not saying be stingy with your time, but be intentional with your time. Mm. And, you know, you were talking about the girls trip and I've learned with girls trip, you know, you don't want to just go on any random girls trip. We don't have enough time mm-hmm. and resources to go on every girls trip that we could possibly get invited to. And, you know, there've been one or two like little trips, not anything major, but I was with some moms. And I mean, I just remember one time it was not moms that I was really close to. It was just kind of a random group brought together by the girls, our daughters. And it was just for a night, but I just remember getting in my car the next day and I just felt like, oh, like mm-hmm. there's something in me that could not wait to get away from there. And it had just been real gossipy the night before. And I found myself gossiping more than I normally would. And it was just a negative environment. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really even realize it until I got out of it.
Yeah.
And so it was a lesson to me. I was like, that's just not a good environment for me. I don't need to go on that trip again. Like mm-hmm. I like these people individually, mm-hmm. you know, I could have a good conversation with each of them individually, but as a group dynamic, it wasn't really healthy. And so I think that we've got to be really careful with that. And that was, like I said, I don't have a lot of time to pursue friendships and to, mm-hmm. to do trips like that or to do overnight outings. And so mm-hmm. that's my advice for moms, especially the ones behind us, is like, don't think that just because you're missing out, you're really missing out on that much. You know, it might be if it's not the right group, then it's really your protection and it's better to be alone than to be in a situation like that.
Yeah. I think that's a good word. And I think sometimes when it feels like maybe you've been aced out of a group or not included or whatever, sometimes I think we need to take that first and foremost is God's protection. But two, I think sometimes that's a compliment. And I know it's hard to take it that way, but I think that's something I've learned as I've hit the 50-year-old mark. There's been some places where like, I'm just not invited anymore. And, mm-hmm. and instead of taking it personally, like I did in my 30s and 40s, like now I'm like, no, I think they're right. Like I'm not your drinking buddy. Like I'm just not that girl. I'm not that person. Or like to your point, like I'm probably not the one that's going to like hold up the end of the gossip, or I'm not going to get outraged about what a coach did at the last baseball game. And like, you know what I mean? You start realizing like it makes sense that maybe I'm not included or I'm getting weeded out a little bit because I'm just not running that race. And so I've started to look at that. And there are times where I'm getting it wrong. Absolutely. Like I get it wrong a lot and I need to go apologize and I need to mend some relationships. But there's a lot of places where I look at it, I'm like, oh yeah, like that's not my arena. And furthermore, I don't want everyone to think I'm in that arena, that guilt by association. And that's what, you know, we talk to our kids about all the time. I'm like, listen, you can go to that party and you can be the one kid not doing it, but you're still at the party with everybody else doing it. And no one's stopping to be like, okay, let me look and see who's not doing the bad thing. Let me take, nobody's doing that. And I have to remember that with myself. Like, you know, be particular about who you're associating with, like be around the people that bring out the best in you. And yes, I don't think we don't just hang out with people that look like us, vote like us, believe like we do. No, absolutely not. But when we're talking inner circle mm-hmm. and going on girls trip and investing time that we don't have a lot of margin in, mm-hmm. be picky.
Yeah. Exactly. That's so true. I mean, and it's true whether you're 16 years old or 60 years old, you have to, mm-hmm. you have to protect your time and know that you want to be around positive influences.
Yep.
You know, one of the great ironies I've found in friendship is that if you don't have the right friends, if you're not surrounding yourself with the right people, it can make you feel even lonelier. Like it's mm-hmm. almost worse to be around the wrong people than to be by yourself, because you can feel lonely in a crowd, you know, because mm-hmm. you can be surrounded and still feel alone.
Yeah. I lived that in college. Did you? I mean, and you've got some college experience now and kids in college and all the things. And I think that's what, I think that's something I learned, is being in a dorm with a ton of people, but nobody who really like thought or the same way that I did necessarily, or weren't from the same place I was from. Like, it was just like, I just remember being lonely in a crowd for the first time in college. And I remember talking to my daughter. My oldest, is a junior in college, and I think everyone, we're so anxious to be like, oh, college are the best years of your life. Oh my gosh, all your lifelong friends are going to come from college. And I remember as she was going, speaking into that a little bit, being like, listen, maybe that's going to be your experience, but I was lonely, especially the first year of college. I was lonely. And it's really critical that you find your people, like find the ones that are, like we've been talking about, the ones that are about the things that you're about. And it's so easy. Don't feel like you're the only one. And she would go on social media, you know, her first couple of, you know, months, and she would go on social media and she would see all of her friends at these other schools with a million girls and all these things. And she's like, everyone found their people but me. And then we'd go talk to these moms, like over Christmas break, we're like, oh, seems like your daughter's doing great and having, you know, has a tons of friends and all that. And they'd be like, oh, she's had the worst fall, just couldn't find friends. And I think it was at that point my daughter went completely off social media. She's still completely off of it. She realized it's not all it seems. And I think that's a lesson for college kids, but all of us, you know, it's easy to look around and see everybody's got their people. Everyone's got their friends, and to feel lonely in that crowd. And not everyone does. It's not all that it seems. People still need new friendships. And so, you know, just being really intentional in that space and finding the right people. And what we said earlier, if you've got one, two, or three, like, you are blessed. Don't worry about the other 20. Like, have the one, two, or three, then, I mean, I think that is a gift. And I've seen that with my daughter. She's got, you know, five or six dear Christian friends at a very, very secular university. And those people love Jesus. And wow, like, I'm just like, thank you, Lord, for just giving her just a few people that are her people. Like, you couldn't ask for anything else.
Yes. I mean, it's so true. And I heard this recently, that it's better, just like you'd rather have four quarters than 100 pennies. Like, it's better to have a few awesome core friends than just a lot of acquaintances.
Oh,
like,
that's
those
good.
Friends are going to show up on your doorstep, be there when you have a crisis. That, you know, my dad always says, most people can count their best friends on one hand. And if you have that, you're lucky.
Oh, yeah.
True, you know, and this is like, and this is what I tell teenage girls too. Like, I think with this idea, and even moms can kind of get stuck in this pattern. Like, I'm not friends with any of the moms at my child's school or wherever it is. And I'm like, you know, most people don't find their squad in one place. You know, most people, when you look at you get to be our age, your people's best friends, it's like maybe a best friend from high school, two best friends from college, one from your working years. Like, it's people you kind of piece together over the years that are like your most trusted sort, you know, trusted friends. Now, occasionally somebody has a group from high school or a group from college. And that's great. But, you know, what I also find sometimes when they do have it all their friends in one place or one sector like that, especially in the teenage years, I find that when something happens in that group, either one person turns or somebody new comes in and somebody gets booted out, it's like they have nowhere to go, because those are the only friends they have.
Totally.
Which is a whole other thing. I kind of preach to, like, have your core friends, invest in those first, but have your peripheral friends too, because a lot of times your acquaintance, and even in parenting, you know, somebody that you're kind of close to or barely know, when your child's in seventh grade, as you get older and you're in high school, you start realizing, hey, that's the one I'm parenting like, you know, and you start to find a camaraderie with that person. And sometimes you get to be really close with those peripheral friends that, you know, they weren't your best friends years ago, but as circumstances bring you together, they can help you both, you know, stay on the track that you feel like God wants you to be on.
Yeah. And you know what? It's not all about you. And it's not all about our kids. Like, you know, I just feel like the Lord is very intentionally putting us in places where people need us too. Right. And so it's so easy, especially, I mean, for me as a mom, but especially in parenting, to be like, you know, we want them with the right crowd, or this is the athletic kids, or this is the whatever. Okay. Well, maybe, but maybe, you know, the person that most needs your kid's friendship is somewhere else. And so let's like open our eyes a little bit and not be so shallow about where that's going to land. And so, you know, I know when my kids were young, I would always say, okay, you can invite 10 kids or however many, 10 kids, your birthday party. And so they would give me their list of 10. And I'm like, great. I actually have room for 15. I want 5 that would never think they'd be invited to your birthday, or 2 or whatever that number is. And my kids would be like, oh, but I'm like, no, like, listen, this isn't at the, I mean, it is your birthday, mind you, but it isn't at the end of the day all about you. And there's people that, you know, that need your friendship and that you have something to offer. And so let's do that. Let's serve people well. And so I just would, I encourage my kids in that, but I encourage myself in that too. And sometimes, you know, the shiniest people that I like, oh man, I just wish I was friend, you know, that's great. But there's others that could benefit from our friendship and we could benefit from theirs. So.
Yeah, that's so good. I don't know what reminds me of a friend of mine who, she was very athletic growing up and she was, you know, champion and very competitive drive, and it's helped her do very well in life. But she still shares a story about her dad, who was a great football player in college, and he coached her softball team growing up. And one year her team, there was just one player on her team who was just slow. She was kind of the bottleneck in the team, you know, just drove her nuts because she felt like this girl was keeping them from winning, and she dropped the ball and she just wasn't as strong of a player as my friend was. And one day when she was complaining about this girl to her dad, who was the coach, her dad told her, you know, her job this year on the team is to teach you patience. And I love that from the dad. He's a competitive guy too, you know, but I love that he could see the bigger picture and that his daughter needed that. And I'm like, what a good service he did for her. Like she remembered that lesson and she's like, didn't appreciate it at the time, but really took it to heart and knew that that was something she needed in her heart too.
Wow. Wow. Well, I feel like the Lord's putting that all over me. Like I got 2 kids at home. They're teaching me patience and perseverance and all kinds of things. So yeah, I feel you.
He'll definitely teach you patience. You know. So the third point we want to pull out of your book that I love, and I think this is such a good posture of the heart to take, is trusting God's plan and knowing that means believing forward for your children. You know, being okay with the unknown and the uncertainty of the future. So talk to me about that and how that's played out in your family.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I have kids, you know, I have, like I said, 1 in college, I have 1 in high school, and I have a first grader. And so, that we adopted from foster care. And so like, it's so interesting now to have the benefit of living some life in parenting and then having a little one again. But, I think what comes to mind for me is, what my middle son, when he was little, he got, he was having trouble reading. And so the school called and they said, we're putting him in the reading club. And I was like, the reading club. And I knew what that meant. That was a club we didn't want to be a part of, I assure you. And so I like lost my mind. Okay. Like the teacher was very great. She's like, hey, he just needs a little extra help. We're putting him in the reading club. Okay. Carrie, like I took that to like, oh my gosh, he's never going to read. He's never going to graduate from high school. Definitely no college. Like he's never going to get a job. And so I guess we just make him comfortable. Like I literally lost my mind, and I'm not generally that emotional of a person, but I mean, I lost it. And so I'm like teared up and I'm going to the school. I'm like, how am I going to tell him that he's in the reading club? Like, how do you tell a first grader, this is the beginning of the end for you, kid? And as he jumps in the car and he's all happy and he's like, mom, it was the best day ever. I'm like, why? And he's like, I got put in the reading club. And I was like, I'm like, tell me about it. He's like, well, and he kind of starts talking about it and I can tell, you know, he's regurgitating what was told to him. And all I could think was, thank goodness that his teacher got to him before I got to him. Right. And so you fast forward all these years later and he's in high school now and he can read, everyone. Don't you worry. He can read. But here's what I know. Were those the beginnings of maybe some red flags in learning? Yes. Did we have some learning stuff we had to work through? Absolutely. Have there been some really hard roads to walk? Yes. But what I know now about him, what I know about Brett, is what I'm told week after week, year after year about this kid. He's the hardest worker on any team he's on. They always say that. He is kind. He is empathetic. He is all these things. Why? Because it's always been hard for him. And that's all he knows, is to work hard and to be kind and to know that it doesn't come easy for everyone. And I think what scares me in that is that the very things that God was creating in him, that I'm seeing him now as he's becoming a young adult, those very things God's been working in his life were the things I would have stripped away from him, given him the chance. Never wanted him to have the heart. I wanted to strip the heart away. And I needed someone to say, listen, Cynthia, believe forward in what God can do with this. Like, was it easy? No. Is it something I would have picked for him? Not at the moment, but I would have picked it now. I would now, knowing what I know, because of right. who God is molding him into. And so this whole idea of believing forward, I think it's critical that we've got to be able to step out of it, especially for people of faith, step out of it and say, okay, this isn't easy, but God uses all things for our good and his glory. And so I can't see it now, but I'm trusting that I will one day.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. I find it helpful to do that same thing, especially when I'm nervous or anxious and I want to go in that panic mode.
Yep.
It's helpful for me to say, God, you know, I'm scared. I don't understand, but I'm thanking you in advance for the great plan you have for my child's life. Like to just say, I know I can't see it yet, but I'm praising you in advance because you have so much more mind than what I can even envision.
Yeah.
And you're so, right. And, you know, especially I think as new moms and young moms, that's where we jump, which is why it's so important to have older mom friends that have been there, because we've all had something like that, that have lived through that and have a positive story to tell.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're talking about your son, I've heard it called that sometimes those trials are called desired difficulties.
Mm.
And I've even heard that, you know, dyslexia can be a desired difficulty. And as parents, like, that's really one of the most important things we do for our children. And I realize this, like, as our kids become teenagers and young adults, I think one of the most important things we do for them is how we frame events. In any event, there are multiple ways to frame it. We can frame it with panic and what if and anxiety and pass that on to our kids. Or we can show that bigger picture like, well, this is going to be kind of fun to see how God uses this. Like, there is no telling what he's going to do with this little story, this little seed or this chapter in their story, what's going to happen down the road because of this that we just don't know yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I've seen, like you're saying, having people around you that show you that is so critical. And for us, the same kid is, I'll briefly tell you this, but he was playing football last year and this was the year he was going to get the Friday Night Lights. And so we kept waiting for him to be put in and he didn't get put in and didn't get put in. And end of the season, we're all really discouraged. He didn't play much at all, a little bit, but not much. And at the banquet, they gave out all the awards and we're just sitting there and they finally, the last award, they call up my son and I'm thinking, why are you calling out my son? Like, literally there's nothing to award. He didn't play. And the coach, it's just amazing, amazing man of God. But the coach started talking about the scout team, and you know what the scout team is, right? It's the, he didn't say this, I am, but it's not the real team. It's the team that gets the real team ready. So they take all the same hard knocks and they put in the long hours. It's blood, sweat, and tears, but they're not out there on Friday night. And he named my son the MVP of the scout team. And you know what that, I know. And but you know what that taught me is he was taking a perceived failure and he named it a success.
Yes.
And I think about that, like, listen, you guys, we got to be in the business of that because life is hard and there are hard knocks for our kids. And we've got to be the people that can look around and say, I'm taking that perceived failure and I'm going to name it a success and I'm going to name scout team. And we need to be doing that for our own kids when things are hard. We need to bleed forward and name scout team, but we got to be doing it for our friends' kids, for the kid down the street that made a pretty bad mistake. Like, let's just start naming scout team and say, listen, I know everybody, myself included, probably wants to call that a perceived failure, but we're going to name it a success today and believe forward in how that can be used in your life. And that someday you will be better for that. And that's not everything. I'm not trying to be Pollyanna. Our kids will make mistakes and things that, I mean, you know, are not good, but at the same time, God is good. And so we can trust him in that.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the great thing and the beauty of parenting with faith is that God can take any heartache, any mistake, any stumble, any failure and bring good from it. I mean,
absolutely.
Like that's what brings a lot of us to faith in the parenting years is because you are discouraged and, you know, the world is just so doom and gloom these days that it's just a hope that surpasses all understanding in all circumstances. That's so true. I have a friend too, that her daughter was a great basketball player and always was a starter. And then she got to the high school team and somebody else, you know, was a better player than she was. So she ended up sitting on the bench most of the year. Mm. But everybody said, you know, including my friend, that how much joy they got watching her on the bench. And just because she just sat there and cheered on her teammates. And, you know, luckily a lot of the adults and the coaches recognized that. They're like, that is going to take you so far in life. Just your attitude and your ability to ride the bench and be cheering for your teammates, even though you want to be out there playing. And as moms, you know, especially when you've been parenting a long time, you're like, that's what you want in your children. Like, that's something they can't go learn. And they can go learn a lot of jobs, you know, in the world. They can go pick up on a lot of different things, but just that character and those core qualities, that's just something that has to be ingrained.
Yeah.
We want to be ingrained in them before they go out into the real world.
Well, and you know how we all know what that looks like. Fast forward to adults. Like, if you can't cheer on other people, like, we all have people around us. We've seen that. You've got the ones who are the equivalent of, your friend's child that can cheer on others, even at their own expense. We see that as adults, like, you know, when someone gets a promotion and a person can cheer that on and be happy for them or all the things. And we also know the moms and the women around us that, they can't be happy for someone else. They can't be, you know, they can't cheer on people when it comes what they feel like at an expense to them. And so, yeah, I mean, it doesn't play out in a pretty way later in life if we don't learn that earlier in life when the stakes seem enormous, but they're not.
Right. Because what happens later in life is people are smarter about the kind of friends that they want.
For sure.
And so when somebody can't be happy for other people, the healthy people are probably not going to choose them as their best friends, you know, like totally. They're going to feel lonely. It's going to hurt our children if they don't learn these things.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So number four, biggest takeaway from life is messy, God is good, is to leave margin on your calendar. Mm. This is so huge. It took me a long time to learn how to do this, but it's so important.
I'm the worst. I know. Like, I feel like we should have a moment of silence for my calendar as I'm looking at it over here. And Carrie, I'm like 150 years old. Apparently I still have a written calendar on my desk.
Oh, and, I do too.
See, we're soulmates. And yeah. I have it on my phone too, or on, you know, like on my computer so that other people can access it. So it's like ridiculous that I have it both places, but moment of silence for all of us who don't have margin on our calendar. And you know, this is something I think I've had to learn, the hard way. I've seen the Lord literally rip things out of my hands, good things, mm-hmm. just saying like, listen, this is not the best. This is not my best. And I won't go into specific details, but one thing in particular, it would be a good thing by all accounts. And I just felt like the Lord, I sensed him saying, you need to let this go. You need less. And I didn't. And you know what? It was ripped out of my hands in an ugly way. And so I would just say like, listen, we have to have margin. If we're going to do the things that we're called to do, if we're going to live the lives that the Lord has for us, then we've got to put margin in there. And margin is not popular. Margin isn't cool. It's not, you know, when you drop off and someone's like, what are you doing today? To be like, oh, I have nothing really planned. Like, that's not cool. It's much more fun to be like, oh, I'm swamped and I've got this and I've got that. And like, that's the popular answer. And I would just, you know, I have this friend, Elaine, and she passed away recently, very suddenly. And she was a lawyer with me back. I used to be a lawyer many years ago. And a couple of years before she passed away, she stopped practicing law. And when she went to the partners to quit, they said, don't quit. I mean, my goodness, you have such a promising future, and went on and on about this promising future. But she quit. She wanted to spend some time at home with her kids and had been, you know, had no margin for so many years. And it's interesting because she obviously had no idea that she was going to have a sudden death a couple of years later. But her husband said something. I know. Her husband said something in a eulogy that'll always stick with me. He says, she left her promising future that the lawyers were talking out. She left that promising future to live in her cherished present with her kids. And I think, oh my gosh, like, could we all learn that from Elaine? That, listen, there's all kinds of promising future that we're chasing after. And we're all chasing after whatever that might be, you know, when the kids get a little bit older, or the marriage gets a little stronger, the finances are a little bit easier, or maybe we get a second home, or well, I don't know what it is that's in your promising future, but like, today's your cherished present. And so leave margin, enjoy it. Like, really, literally slow down and look around and be grateful in the moment for what you have, and live today well, live this stage in your parenting well, or at your work, or whatever the Lord has you doing right now. Live in your cherished present instead of always, always chasing off after that promising future.
Yeah. When it goes back to the story you shared earlier, when you were stressed and about, you know, your foster child and didn't know what to do. And if your calendar was packed, crammed, packed, you would not have had time to go to the river and have God reveal to you that you needed to go look at the rocks and remember that verse from scripture. Like, yeah. It's only because you had a little headspace that you even made time for that. You know, that we have to leave ourselves open to those encounters with God. And I'm like you, you know, I've just, in our society, especially if you have kind of a driven perfectionistic personality, like a lot of us do. Mm-hmm. And it's been rewarded for most of our lives. It made us great students. It made us great employees. It helped us to thrive and succeed and do everything that everybody's telling you to do. But the older you get, you got to realize that, one, your body can't always do what it used to do. I mean, I used to, you know, especially when I was working on book deadlines, I'm like, I don't know how I would live on 4 or 5 hours of sleep some night, but I can't do that. I'm like, even if that means writing fewer books a year, you just have to prioritize what's important to you. But just also having that headspace and being able to enjoy life, because when we do get too busy, I think that's when we get empty and numb, and just, we start feeling like robots, just losing, just numb to the emotions of life, both the good and the hard.
Yeah. And not only are we struggling with it, and the people who pay for it are those around us as well. Right. And I mean, my kids used to joke back in the day that like we always have people in our house. Like I'm very extroverted. I'm always like, if we're going to invite three people, let's invite 30. Like that's kind of my personality. But my kids would joke and they'd be like, Hill hath no fury, like mom trying to get ready for a party on a Friday night or, you know, like kind of joking. And I was like, they're right. Like, I mean, they were paying the price of me having very little margin and trying to cram a lot of things in that we just didn't have the time to do. And so you either start letting some things go. Like I still have a million people in our house. I just don't care that my house looks perfect anymore. I don't care that I have the right food. Literally, we had the pastor of our church over recently that I do not know well. He and his wife over, we got takeout and we were 5 minutes late getting home because the tollway outside where we were driving was shut down and we all laughed about it and everybody's fine. And so just those reminders of like, it doesn't have to be perfect. And, and yeah, leave some margin to do the things that matter. And your kids are watching that, your spouse. I mean, it matters. And so not all of us have the luxury of, I mean, you know, we all have constraints. You and I both work and raise kids and all the things, but at the same time, there's plenty of things if we really stop and assess that we can let go. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one person that comes to mind that I just always admired how she did it, but is my husband's mom. And she never worked outside the home, but she was just a great homemaker. But one thing, especially after we got married and had children and just got to that season of life where the people in her life were going through some hard things, that she left her calendar so open. Mm-hmm. Like she really did not make many plans. And so like if we ever needed a babysitter, she's almost always available, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. But also just things like she was the one that when her sister got cancer, she would just go and stay for 2 weeks with her and take care of her. But it's almost like she left her calendar open to be available for her loved ones like that. I mean, and there were sometimes my sister-in-law's friends would be going through something. She's like, oh, I'll go do this for you. I'll go just to be that person. And obviously not everybody has that much time. It has the ability to stay home and, you know, make that their main priority in life is to just be available for other people. But I think it's a beautiful way to live. And it goes against the grain of society that tells us that we should have tangible success and big goals and dream big, which there's a place for that. But I think it's also neat to look at people who live their lives with that open calendar and that open heart, just saying, you know, who needs me today? You know, where can you use me, God? And just to be a steward and a servant in that way.
Yeah. Even if that was like one day a week or, I mean, you and I talking about, it, I mean, I know you're right in the middle of book edits and other things. And like, I think there's seasons, right, of crazy for all of us. But if you can't name it a season, if it's just how you live, then that might be a problem. Be able to name it a season and say like, in this moment I'm living, you know, I just released a book that we're talking about and I've been doing a ton of interviews for the book and I'm in a season of kind of crazy, but that season ends, you know, in the next couple of months. And then we're going to go and live some normal life until the next season starts up. But if it's just year round, that's not a season, then that's probably something worth addressing.
Yeah. And I love, that is a great idea about one day a week. I remember talking to a woman recently that said that she had every Monday was kind of her day for her mother-in-law. She'd take her to the doctor and that was just the day that she set aside to help with her mother-in-law's health. And then after her mother-in-law passed away, she was like, she really missed that day. And I was like, that just shows her heart that she missed having that time with her. And so what she started doing was saving that day for other things like that, for other people who need her. That's a great example, like you were talking about. Leave it, at least leaving that margin on that one day so you know that you did it somewhere. Okay. And then the last point, which is one of my favorites, might be my very favorite because it's so important, is to remember that our God is a God of peace and order and not chaos and confusion. Mm. I love that. I have to tell that to myself all the time. Like if I'm feeling confused and foggy headed, that's not from God. He is a God of order and peace, not chaos and disruption and confusion. Mm. But that's a message that really gets lost in our society today.
It really does, especially in a culture that, I don't know, I feel like we're in a culture that tells you it's not important unless it has platform or an attaboy or people are watching, right? And so it just generates this chaos, this work harder, this pull yourself up by the bootstrap. And I see that not only in myself, I see it in my kids as I have, a junior in high school right now, who's trying to get, you know, all the activities and all the things to get into college and all this. And I'm just like, you know, like at the end of the day, I mean, we talk about this often in our house, like the Lord has a plan. Nothing thwarts the plans of God. So listen, like rest in that. And so you may not have all the right things, you know, quote unquote, right things, whatever. That's okay. The Lord will put you where he needs you to be. And I have to tell myself that too, because it is this running around in chaos and I think something that has been really pressed on my heart that I write about in my book is just that if our theology doesn't line up with our reality, it's not theology. You know what I'm saying? Like if it's just good advice, if we read the Bible and we're like, oh, okay, that's great. But then our reality is chaos and disorder and all the things you're talking about, like that's not a theology because that's not how Jesus ran his life. Like it was not chaos. And so I just try to think like, okay, what I'm hearing on Sunday or whatever I'm hearing on a podcast or when I'm reading God's word, like how does that really apply to Tuesday? You know, like what does it mean? And I would just encourage us in this world that promotes platform and that it needs to be seen and acknowledged that some of the most important things we're going to do on a given day are the foundational things. I think about literally that story in the Bible, you know, the two houses are built on two different foundations, right? One was built on rock. One was on sand. Jesus is telling this story at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. And the two houses, by all accounts, looked the same, had the same purpose. I mean, you know, they wanted shelter. Whoever was going to live there wanted shelter, a place to call home. And so what happens? Storms come and the one that's built on sand, well, it didn't make it. The one that's built on rock, it does. And, you know, I mean, take this, if nothing else, the storms reveal your foundation.
Oh, and I think, that again, that is so good.
The storms reveal your foundation. Yeah. And I say that because, you know, I live in Texas. And so we had to do some foundation work on our house. And I thought, you know, oh, we'll just put in these like piers or pillars. I don't know if anyone else has this where you live. But so they came and I thought, oh, there's going to need to put two or three, you know, piers in our house. Well, man, Carrie, I'm here to tell you, they had to put like 14 or 19 piers under our house to lift it back up. And, you know, it cost two Disney trips and that was really fun. Don't you worry. But since that time, like nobody's ever like been walking their dog and like, ooh, look at the Ganoff's foundation. I mean, nobody's come over dinner and been like, ah, you almost had a good year. We noticed you had your foundation. Like nobody's talking about it. Nobody cares about the fact we fixed our foundation. But here's the thing. At the end of the day, we can have great hardwood floors and, you know, fancy furniture or whatever the things are in your home. But if your foundation isn't in the right spot, what do you have? And so, I mean, that's my challenge in this world that's telling us like, hey, it's chaotic and you've got to do this and that. We're running around. Like I would say, step back, go back and do the foundational things. Make sure that your theology is matching up with your reality. Spend time in God's word, care about the things that matter, serve people, put the right community around you, be the hands and feet of Jesus. Do the things that most likely no one's going to pat you on the back. It's not going to gain you a big audience, but they're still the foundational things that matter because then when the storms come, like you're on the rock and you're not in that sandy ground.
Yeah. You know, that's so good. And something I've realized too, is that when I feel like my life is too chaotic and I can't even think because there's too much going on, I know I'm like, I got to cut back, you know, and a lot of people are like, well, I have nothing to cut back. I'm like, there's always something we can cut back. But you know, there've been times where I've had to like cancel things or like not commit to something that I was about to commit to. Like, I can't do it right now. I need more space for my family. I need more time for something, or maybe it's a health crisis, whatever it is. But I have a friend that she even said she went through this a few years ago, that she had one child who was struggling and she's a psychologist. So that was hard for her. Just, it was a mental health struggle. But just when she felt like she was maybe getting her head around that, her other child started struggling too. Mm-hmm. And so she had two of them at one time. And she's like, her philosophy during that season, she realized that she was going to give herself grace and space. And she basically cleared her calendar of everything that she could, except for the core essential commitments. Like, wow. I'm going to give myself grace and space. And so I just share that for anybody who's listening that maybe you're thinking, well, I've missed the boat. I didn't build my life on the strong foundation and I did it all wrong. That's okay. You know, like God works with all of our circumstances, that he works with any messy life, whatever it looks like, wherever we are. And, you know, you might need to give yourself that grace and space to be like, don't be scared to clear off the things on your calendar that can wait until next year. I mean, I'm sure you're like this, Cynthia. I mean, probably even with your book. I mean, there were probably every book I've written, the last few ones especially, I thought I was going to put them out sooner than I did. You know, like when I wrote Love Her Well, you know, I thought it would come out. I thought I'd finish it 6 months earlier than I did. And then this a book that I'm releasing next year, I thought it was going to come out last year, but just the timing wasn't there. I just wasn't able to give it what I wanted to when I wanted to do it, because life and family matters just took over. But that's okay. You know, like when things happen, it's always in God's timing. And that's where our peace comes, is just trusting that even if our plan's not happening the way we envisioned it, we can trust God's plan and we can trust his timing.
Yeah. Grace and space. I think that is a great word. And that's the thing about these foundational things. Like it's not too late. It's never too late. And so, right. Yeah, that's the encouragement, is like, lean into that. Like, mm-hmm. That's why God is so good. And he's so merciful. And like, what are the things you're being called to do? Where are the places that you're like, I can do better at this, or I need to slow some things down, or maybe I need to pick up the pace in some other areas. Like, today's the day. Like, you have the opportunity to do that, and you don't have to live in shame or regret. And gosh, I mean, Carrie, as moms, like, it is so hard to not live in shame or regret, or, you know, whatever the stuff. And I just encourage people, like, listen, the Lord picked you for these kids. Mm-hmm. He picked you at this time in this community with the people you're with the spouse you're with. Like, that's intentional. And so live that well, and trust him that if you're following him, you're going to miss the boat some, but he doesn't, and he'll get it right with you.
Yeah. And I have found, haven't you found that those things that, like, man, I missed the boat there, I should have done this better. Like, that's really what keeps us humble in parenting. Mm-hmm. And it lets us see, like, when something does go well, despite your failure, like, I know I can't take credit for that, because that wasn't me. That was God's work. You know, that was him working with my mistake and filling in that gap. And that deepens our faith when we see that happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the other thing is back to kind of the very top of what we started with, like, some of this stuff we just got to laugh about, and it's funny. Like, you know, you just got to be able to be like, oh my gosh. Yeah. The humility piece is huge in this house, because I feel like every time, like, I'm doing something that I feel like is, you know, good stuff for the Lord or whatever, like, one of my kids derails, or I derail, or something, you know, just, and I have to just laugh and be like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Like, the Lord has a sense of humor, and I need a little humility. We all need to keep a little humility, and let's just laugh about it. Like, I don't know. I just feel like people would be so much more receptive to us in the gospel if we didn't take ourselves quite so seriously and everything, because we're all getting it wrong, and life is messy for all of us. And so it's in that, like, embrace that and find God in it.
Oh, it's so good. Well, Cynthia, you've shared so many good words today, and I can't wait to hear this conversation play back, as after Harry edits it and I get to listen to it again. But what is a final takeaway that you would give to anybody listening, especially a mom who's discouraged and feels a little stuck right now?
Yeah, I would just say, like, you are not alone in that. And I would just encourage you, listen to truth. Don't listen to what the world says a good mom is supposed to do, or a good parent is supposed to do. Like, listen to what God has for you and what he has for your family. And some of the moments that feel the most defeating and deflating are the moments that have been the biggest in my parenting. And I would encourage you also, we get caught up in thinking that these are the big things, getting in the right school, or, you know, the right preschool, or our kids being on the right friend group, or being on the right team, like, all these things. And having the benefit now of an older kid, and if you have older kids, you probably can echo this for me, but if you don't, let me just share this. The big things aren't the big things, right? It's the small things that end up being the big things. And so all those practices where you carpool and you get to talk to your kids and their friends, and all those Friday nights, maybe when your kiddo wasn't invited, but you're at home and you're just talking about what really matters, like, all those small things are actually, in the scheme, they're the big things of parenting. And so just be encouraged. If you feel like, man, I've messed up all the big things, I don't know that those were the big things. Focus in on the small, make margin, and trust the Lord in it.
Oh, that's so good. I needed to hear that myself.
Same. Replay it for me too later, Carrie. That's right. Hey, can I say one more thing? Carrie Kimhakis, I just need everyone to know this. I think everybody knows this. Like, you're the best. Like, not only are you the best at what you do, I can say it, and we all know that, but just you're real sweet. And like, you and I don't know each other. I've reached out. We text on occasion. You're always so sweet. Like, hey, how can I help? Let's be involved. What can we do? And I just hope everybody knows that, like, you're the real thing, and you are so
who cannot be sweet to you. I love your personality, and I just, like, you are so wise, but you're funny. You just bring so much to the table. So you're an easy person to be sweet to.
Well, thanks, Carrie. We're going to be best friends one day. Maybe it might be in heaven, because we live too far apart, but someday.
I know, someday. Well, I am so thankful for you and just your perspective and everything you're bringing to the table with 20 years. Is 20 years of parenting experience?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you're a gift to parents today. And like I said, I've never seen as much discouragement as I'm seeing today as I'm traveling around with moms our age and moms younger, and just all the generations. So thank you for this book. I'm excited to hear about your next one. I think there's some other things in the pipeline. So keep us all posted.
Thanks, Carrie.
Friends, thank you for tuning in today. I am so grateful to have you here. And if you enjoyed this show, please subscribe wherever you listen and leave a ratings or review so that other people can find these messages too. For links to my books, my social media, and my new community on Substack, check out the show links.
Thanks again for your support and have a great day.